This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, Cavalier Guard Ty Jerome joins us on the show. Ty, thanks for joining us this morning, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
First off, can I just ask you about the All-Star weekend, the All-Star break, things like that? Did you think, and Lima could maybe ask this better, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take it away. Did you think maybe that the, did you watch the All-Star game games first off?
I watched bits and pieces. I watched Don and Ev win the skills challenge, and I watched DG shooting a three-point contest. That's all I watched, though.
Did you think that it would be better if it was just East-West the way it used to be?
I understand the switch-up because, you know, I guess they're trying to make it more competitive, and I completely get that. But it's tough, and I think a lot of challenges come with that, but definitely East-West is the traditional way, and I think a lot of people miss that for sure.
I mean, I imagine, Ty, that when you were younger, you were watching some of those games, All-Star Weekend, when they would get down to the wire, everybody would get out of the way, they'd get the ball to Kobe. You know, I was watching one yesterday, Vince Carter, Stephon Marbury, and it was awesome. Everybody was competing the final quarter, and it looked, had the feel of a normal game. How do we get there again? Because that was awesome, and I think fans want this to be awesome again.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's tough, right? Because the season's so long, and you know, this is everyone's break. So to come in here and ask guys to play hard is tough, but I get it. Because like you said, I was younger. I was actually just talking to someone about this. I vividly remember watching Kobe pick up LeBron full court and watching that, but then again, I think 4 years ago, maybe, when they first did the Elam ending, the target score, I remember, like, Kyle Lowry taking a charge at the end of the game, too. So I think the guys are just going to have to, you know, make a decision to compete at the end, but I completely get where they're coming from because it's, you know, like I said, it's the break and guys are trying to stay healthy and nobody's trying to risk injury in the All-Star game.
Ty Jerome joining us on the show. So what was it like to get DeAndre Hunter back on your team?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I've been telling people I don't want to undervalue losing George and Karis on or off the court. They were phenomenal players, and they brought a presence to our locker room that would definitely be missed. But, you know, DeAndre has been my best friend for some years, and on and off the court, he's going to bring something special for us. So it's super exciting.
Were you texting him in the lead-up to the deadline, like, hey, let's make this happen? Were you hearing any rumors? Because I imagine that some NBA players don't want to talk about this at all, and maybe others have a little more fun with it.
Yeah, that was slightly above my pay grade. You know, they're not calling me asking me what we should do at the deadline. But when the rumor came out, I was asking him, like, yo, do you know if there's any truth to it? And he wasn't sure either. So we were kind of just waiting and playing the waiting game. And then when Shams dropped it, actually, I FaceTimed him immediately. And it was a fun call.
So take us through what the next few days of practice, once he actually – you know, passes the physical and he gets in there on the practice court and you guys start figuring out how to use him. Obviously, you can have a chemistry with him, but it's also about making sure that everybody else gets into a comfort level. They figure out where he wants the ball, what are good spots for him, and what did you hear from Coach Atkinson about making this work?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more natural than everybody thinks, because he's a unreal talent, and I don't say this in a negative way. I say this in a positive way. But he's a real plug and play guy too, because he's a great on ball defender. He can help us rebound with his size. He can catch and shoot. He can attack a closeout. Like, all that stuff is just natural for him to do. Obviously, he's gonna take a few games to pick his spots, but we play a lot off reads and we play fast, and he's going to bring another element to us on both sides of the ball just naturally with the way he plays. And then, like you said, picking his spots is going to take a few games to get used to, maybe some weeks, maybe even some months. But, you know, we're going to keep building together and we're going to keep getting better.
Has this been like your first season with Cleveland instead of your second season because of the injury last year?
100%.
What has been this transition with the Cavaliers, because a lot gets thrown at you. You get hurt, and then they have a new coach, and so it looks similar to the naked eye, to the layman, but you would know better. What's this transition been like for you?
I mean, last year was super tough. I tried everything I could to get my ankle right. Ended up needing surgery, which, you know, set us back at another, you know, 3-4 months. Couldn't get it back in time for the playoffs, so then it was all about getting right for this season. And then we hire a new coach, and fortunately for me, when I was in Golden State, Kenny was our head assistant there, so I had a little familiarity with him already. Knew what he liked, didn't like, and I just came in to camp in as best shape as possible and just trying to help the team in any way I can.
Was there an element of surprise at all just how this thing went to start a year? You guys did have the advantage of, you know, chemistry-wise, you know, bringing back the core, but then you add a new coach to it, you'd think there'd be a little bit of a learning curve, and instead you guys got basically a record-setting start in the first few months, 3 months, really, of the NBA season. Were you surprised at how everything gelled that easily?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Definitely a little surprised. I mean, I knew we were going to be really good. I didn't think we'd start 15-0. And then I think, you know, the more we played together and the more we figured it out and we were able to learn and wins. And, you know, Kenny and the staff just do a great job of every day instilling in us that this is all about just getting better and getting better and getting better. There's not going to be any drop off. We're not going to celebrate any wins or get, you know, put our head down after a loss. It's all about getting better. And they're just empowering us to play fast, play the right way, everyone to be confident. It's a joy to play for him and the staff, and it's a joy to be around these guys every day.
All right, now we're in the sports talk radio world, so we can't just come on the air and go, yay, the Cavs won. We got to debate things, and some of the debates we've had is who is the most instrumental to this season going the way it's gone so far? Is it the addition of Coach Atkinson? Is it Darius Garland healthy and playing the best basketball of his career? Is it Evan Mobley making the leap? So, Ty, if you're ever going to have a post-basketball broadcasting career, you got to break these down. So what would you go with?
You got to put me on the spot here. All right, this is not a cop-out. Like, this is not the easy answer. I mean, this is not the political answer. This is what I truly believe, okay? So don't give me anything for this, but you guys know how hard it is to win the NBA. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, 15-0 was a historic start, and, you know, there's only one other team that has the record we have. And you truthfully need it. You need everything. You know what I mean? Like, you need DG playing at his all-star level. You need Don. You need Evan and GA playing at their level. But, all right. But I guess the real answer is, I would say it's our chemistry. because we're able to bounce back and lose as a team. Nobody's pointing fingers. And when you have that going along with the talent, that's what allows you to be really good in this league. You know what I mean? So it's not really just about, you know, one guy doing this or one guy doing that. We need everyone's talent 100%. But when you can bounce back from adversity fast, it's because of the fact that guys like each other and the chemistry you have. Nobody's pointing fingers. Everybody's staying together. Everybody's empowering everyone. Like that's what it takes to win in this league, along with the talent, along with the, you know, the three all-stars. I think we should have had four, and everyone else playing good basketball.
That was a good sports talk answer.
That was a great answer.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Ty Jerome, Cavs point guard, joining us on the hotline here during the All-Star break. So when I watched the Cavs the last few years, it seemed like that you guys were getting better every year. It's been nice growth under the GM, Kobe Altman. But we were wondering if there was going to be an identity forged. You know, you have some teams that you watch in the NBA, they're like a tough guy team or this try-hard team. Some teams have a swagger. Is something going on right now with the Cavs that over the last few weeks, Darius joined with some fans after hitting game winners? You got Jared Allen showing some nastiness with a rebuttal screen. Tristan at the end of the Raptors game. Are the Cavs maybe starting to forge an identity here?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. I think it comes back to just us believing in ourselves and the staff really empowering us to be who we are. Like, you know, you empower DG to go take that shot and just be himself. Nobody's telling him to go talk. Nobody's telling him not to talk. It's just DG, be yourself. J.A., you got frustrated, be yourself. Like, we all have your back. Tristan, we can't encourage that dunk at the end of the game, but we don't support that. But like I said, be yourself. And I think that's what it comes down to is the staff encouraging everyone to be yourself. Everyone has each other's back. There's definitely a swagger to us that we're playing with. But it's natural. It's not fake. It's not forced. It's natural, and that's really important.
So what is the second half goal here, Ty? Is it just to stay healthy? What is the goal?
I mean, we definitely want the one seed. There's not a number of, it's not like, oh, you know, we want to win 65, 70 games. I mean, sure, we want to win every game as possible, but we definitely want that one seed. I'd be lying if I say we didn't want that one seed. And then, of course, health is the biggest priority, but like I said earlier, it comes down to us getting better every day, because if we don't get any better before the playoffs start, we're not going to make the run we want. So we got to continue to get better individually and collectively, continue to stay healthy. But I'd be lying if I said the one seed wasn't our goal.
Now that you have a breather here, like, when will you guys come back together, and what kind of message do you think you're going to get from the coaching staff, from Kenny Atkinson? Because you guys have this amazing record. You're tied with the best record in the NBA. The one seed is there for you guys to hold on and be able to keep if everything goes well. So what is going to be a renewed mindset here the rest of the season? Because there still are a lot of games to go.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same that it has been. We get back together tonight. We have a little practice tonight. Get everyone moving and stuff, and get some shots up. Get back together. But it's going to be the same message, guys. It's going to be, you know, get better every day. Keep stacking days and lock in. This is when basketball gets fun now. You know what I mean? It's what everyone's been looking forward to all year. You know, these games get more and more meaningful, and then you play in the playoffs. So that's what you work all year for. So it's just going to be lock in and get ready to have some fun.
Ty, thank you so much for the time. Know you're busy. Hope to run you down again soon. All the best and good luck, friend.
Thanks, guys.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims.
Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We bring in super friend of the show. She is from cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. She is Mary Kay Cabot. Hello, Mary Kay. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Mary Kay.
Mary Kay, any chance Huntington Bank Field becomes Huntington Bank football playing surface? Now that we have Rocket Arena instead of Rocket Mortgage Field House.
I doubt it. I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
I think we're averaging a name change for our venues once a year on every venue. What do you think?
I don't think that's accurate.
Well, now we're 2 for 2, right? The ballpark.
Follow the money.
That's right. Follow the money.
There it is, Mary Kay.
100%.
There it is. So, I like your story that you posted just a little while ago. Cam Ward vows to make teams who pass on him pay. We got another guy with a grudge already, Mary Kay. What's going on
here?
Good
job.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Cam Ward is that no one's really heard from him yet in this pre-draft process. We've heard plenty of things from Shador Sanders because he was at the East-West Shrine Bowl. We've heard and he was at the Super Bowl, and we've heard plenty of things from his dad, Dion. What we haven't heard much from is Cam Ward, and he did not go to the Shrine Bowl. He did not go to the Senior Bowl. He did not go to the Super Bowl. He was not running around Radio Row giving interviews and doing videos and all those kinds of things. So we haven't heard from Cam at all yet. And therefore, I think sometimes it almost feels like Shador has had all the momentum and is getting all the run. Well, that's probably about to change because now Cam has spoken up. And next week, we are all heading to the NFL Combine where he will be interviewed all over national media, but all of us will be standing in front of him at a podium as well and interviewing him. So now it's time for Cam to sort of step up and take center stage. And I think he showed us in this interview last night that he means business.
Does it matter if he throws at the Combine or not?
No, I don't think it does matter if he throws at the Combine. I know teams really appreciate it and would love it if he did, but I don't think it's going to matter in the grand scheme of things because he will throw at his pro day at Miami and he will throw at private workouts, not on those top 30 visits because they're not allowed to do that when they come into town, but when teams go out for a private visit, they're allowed to do that there. So he'll do plenty of throwing over the next couple of months, maybe not at the Combine.
Your thought has been that they take a quarterback at 2. You still feeling that way as you get ready to go to the Combine next week?
I am still feeling that way. I just don't see it any other way. I think you have to take a chance on one of these quarterbacks if you think that they can win. And I'm going by what I asked Andrew Berry at the Senior Bowl a couple of weeks ago, or now I guess 3-4 weeks ago, when I asked him, do you see a quarterback in this draft that can win? Do you see some winning quarterbacks in this draft? And he said, yes. Well, if there are those there and not just one, and you have a chance at them, then you have to take that chance. You have to write your ticket there and give it a shot. I don't think that you can go for a non-organization changing player at that position at number 2. You don't hope to be picking that high anytime soon again. So I would take the shot and build around the quarterback and see how it goes.
And do you believe said quarterback will be married with a veteran free agent a la Kirk Cousins?
Yes, I do think that a veteran free agent will come in here or a trade or someone. I don't know if it will end up being Kirk Cousins or someone else, but there's no doubt in my mind that there will be some kind of a bridge quarterback coming in here. I think they'll probably sign or acquire 2 veteran quarterbacks to go along with Shador or Cam. I think that could come from the pool of Kirk Cousins. You know, there are a number of quarterbacks in that category. I think what you have to be a little careful of is acquiring a veteran quarterback who really fancies himself as a starter who can take the team the distance. I don't think that's really going to serve you well if you are drafting a quarterback at number 2 who you know is going to start this season. So in my mind, that sort of eliminates the Aaron Rodgers. I don't know where that puts Kirk Cousins, because I know he feels like he can still start and win for a team in the NFL. So I don't know. I think it's a little bit tricky when you look at who you want to acquire as your veteran bridge.
There were little things floating around last week about Aaron Rodgers. I cannot see Aaron Rodgers in a Browns uniform. Could you?
Well, probably not, just because of what I just mentioned.
Yes.
The fact that if he's going to come back and play more football, he's not going to come back to mentor a rookie. I don't think he's at that point yet. I think in his second season out of Achilles surgery, I think he'll probably feel like he can play better football in 2025, and that if he's going to put himself out there and continue to play, it's not going to be to ride the bench.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us, plaindealercleveland.com. Myles Garrett made an awful lot of appearances during Super Bowl week. He was everywhere he wanted to be, and the more Myles spoke, the more it just seemed like everybody nationally assumed, well, he's going to be playing somewhere else next year. What's his new destination? How do you see this playing out?
Well, I do think that everyone jumped to the conclusion that the Browns were going to readily just acquiesce and trade him, and I just don't think that's the case. I think the Browns are going to exercise patience, let this play out some. I think we are obviously going to hear from Andrew Berry at the Combine when we get there next week, and he'll have more to say about this then, but I'm guessing he's probably going to say the same thing that he said to a few of us at the Senior Bowl and the stance that the Browns have stood by since then. And that is that they're not trading him, not even if someone offers them two first-round picks. Now, I've seen things change. You can say something like that in 1 month, and 2 months later, you change your mind for some reason, for unforeseen circumstances. But I do believe at this point in time, they don't have any intentions of trading him, and I think they're going to hang on to that point for as long as they can.
Mary Kay, I think we're all assuming that next year is a must-win year for Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. But I mentioned in our last segment, with Myles and all of this, I wonder what marching orders the Haslams have given to their front office. You know, like, we need to win this year. Or we understand that our roster needs some work. This is a building year. What do you think the Haslams have told the guys who are running the football team? And what do you think they have to do next year?
Well, I think that the answer is sort of somewhere in the middle. I think the marching orders are, and I don't even think they need marching orders. This is what Andrew and Kevin are going to want too, to go out in 2025 and to win as many games as they possibly can with their new quarterback, with their new pieces that they add to the team, with the core players that they still have on the team, and try to get back to winning as much winning as they can as soon as possible, while also restocking, retooling, and rebuilding a little bit for the future. But retooling and restocking doesn't mean that you're not trying to win as many games as you possibly can. And if you just stop turning the ball over and you get a running game and good, decent quarterback play, you're already going to be at 7 or 8 victories. So I just don't think that you have to go out there, and there's no such thing in my mind in today's NFL of tanking and rebuilding and tearing it all down. There's just no need to do that with all of the avenues that you have to keep a team competitive. The Steelers have never had a losing season in 18 years under Mike Tomlin. I think that should say a lot.
Mary Kay, you said you're off to the combine here in a little bit. I'm just curious, like, total fan question here. Just, What do teams actually learn at the combine? And can anything be said for a player that doesn't want to do something or, you know, I think you're right about the, if you're going to work out in an individual session, why should you have to throw three times? Like, the team's probably going to bring you in anyway if you're a high draft pick. So what do teams actually learn, and what's the biggest benefit teams have from the combine? Is it just figuring out guys maybe later in the draft, or bubble guys between free agents and 6th, 7th rounders? What do they learn?
Well, one of the biggest things that they learn at the combine is the culture fit and the personality of the player through the interviews. So those interviews that go until like 11 o'clock every night at the combine are vitally, vitally important. That is where you really start to get to know a player or continue to get to know a player, perhaps maybe before he comes in for your top 30 visit. So you've got several points at which you get to talk to these guys. Senior Bowl is one of them, East-West Shrine Game, then you've got the combine, and then you've got your top 30 visits. So these are tremendous opportunities to sit face-to-face with the player and really dig in there and get your, you know, team psychologist in there and coaches and personnel people and try to get into the mind, heart, and soul of a player, especially a quarterback. I mean, if it's going to be the player that is going to lead this team for the next how many ever years, you need to know what you're getting. So I think that's one of the biggest things you'll get out of it.
How active will this team be in free agency, Mary Kay?
I think they'll be somewhat active. I think they need to add maybe three or four key pieces in free agency, and then there will always be those three or four other sort of second or third tier players that you will acquire to bolster certain positions. But I think they can get three or four key pieces. I don't think they are necessarily going to go out and pursue the top three players in this free agency period because of the money situation that they're in right now. But I do think that they will find opportunities to fortify a position and bring in a couple of starters that will really help them.
I don't want to make this a weekly question. I'm still just wondering about Nick Chubb and how they're going to probably approach the draft with a running back, because there's plenty of good running backs out there, I think, in coming out of college. So just your thoughts on Nick and the running back position.
Well, there are two positions at which I would draft two players. Now, they've got their nine original picks, and they will have also, I think, as many as three compensatory picks. So with those 12 picks, I would actually be drafting two quarterbacks. I would take one at number two, and then I would take another one somewhere, wherever it seems to make sense. If you see one that got left behind by someone in the third round or the fourth round, I would snatch them up there, develop them, and if nothing else, then you have some trade bait or a good quarterback in the pipeline, maybe your future backup or something like that. So I would draft two quarterbacks, and I would draft two running backs. I would go for one sort of fast, shifty, multi-purpose, someone along the lines of a Jerome Ford, but someone else kind of like him that you can pair with him, but also more of the big bruising back that can get you those tough yards on the goal line and in short yardages and things like that. So I would be reshaping the running back room, and I would definitely be going for two.
Mary Kay, as always, we enjoy our conversation with you. Have a great week, and we look forward to talking a little bit more as we get closer to the combine. Should be a lot of fun. Hopefully we get some answers when the team goes there as well. Thank you, Mary Kay.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
Thank you, guys.
Our buddy from Fox Sports 1, John Fanta, joining us here. It's Jake Volnick, Jonathan Peterlin with you guys on Afternoon Drive. John, how are we doing today?
Doing well, guys. It's great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me, and love being on with you guys every Tuesday afternoon. A lot of fun.
Every Tuesday at 4, and now usually Nick is the one driving, and I'm sitting there playing in the two chair, and so Nick's out today. He's out tomorrow, but we never get a chance to talk about my bowling prowess then, because,
Oh, my.
Yeah, like, you know, it's just not, how do you bring that up organically, right? Well, you can't, and so I just need to tell you and let you know. Right. Do you know anything about my bowling ability or lack thereof or whatever you want to call it?
I don't, and I'd love to see you ball. You'll have to send over some videos. I'll show EJ Tackett and Dick Weber and whatnot.
Okay, so I'm retired now. I need to let you know that I'm retired now. I was on a scholarship for Lindenwood University, so I was a bowler all the way up until then, and then me and Brad Miller crossed paths briefly. And wow. Then that was it. Like, you know, because Brad was a couple years younger than me. And then him and Kyle Sherman are now like killing it on YouTube. But what's great, I need to tell you the story, though, because like, so I love bowling, obviously. So I did it every day for a million years. It was a thing I did and I loved it. And obviously I went to school on a bowling scholarship, right? So like, and you know, Lindenwood, I always tell people that don't know bowling, Lindenwood is like, it's like Oregon of college bowling, in that we've won a couple titles. We're good. We're not a heritage program, but we still put some people to the pros, and it just is what it is. But when it comes to like staying active in the sport, Like, I lost my way, and then all these YouTube stars, and Brad and Kyle being one of them, has brought me back in, and so now I listen to you do these PBA. I heard you do the PBA Delaware Open a couple weeks ago. You do fantastic on there, John.
Well, I appreciate that, and that's very cool that you had your bowling career. I meant Pete Weber as well as aging there. But I'll tell you what, it's a fun sport, and what the guys go through every single week to make a television show, I'm proud to do it for Fox Sports. It's amazing. I mean, you're talking about a tournament where the field's like 100 players, and you got to get down to five by the end of the week that then are going to bowl on the show. These guys are bowling not one or two or three games of bowling a day. They're bowling 15, 20, 25 games of bowling a day just to be able to make it on a show between their training, between their actually qualifying. It's unreal. Last year I covered a guy. He was in pre-tournament qualifiers, so he had to just do something just to make it to the qualifying stage. He drove 12 hours from Missouri to Delaware and, overnight, didn't sleep, qualified, made it to the show, won, and he was exempt on the tour. And it was an American dream coming true. The guy was crying his eyes out. So it's a cool sport. It gets a lot of viewership, a lot of attention on social media, and there's really a niche following for it. And honestly, growing up in Northeast Ohio, I spent many a Friday night at Fairview Lanes or Bay Lanes. I mean, we got a lot of really good bowling alleys, bowling centers across the area.
No, it's great. And like,
Buckeye
and
as well.
And Randy Peterson is kind of like, for those that don't know, he's basically like, I call him like the Troy Aikman of PBA broadcasters that way. Like, and so the tandem you guys have, you know what I love about you, John, in those broadcasts? You bring some enthusiasm to the game that is very hard to be able to do because bowling at the heart of it does not have much enthusiasm.
I appreciate that, and that means a lot for you to say, and you know what? That's my goal. I mean, look, when you grow up and the voices of your teams are Tom Hamilton, Joe Tate, wham, with the right hand, and Jim Donovan, who, as far as I'm concerned, Jimmy is just one of one, as is Hammy. Tom Hamilton will call me two or three times a year and just talk with me for an hour about sportscasting and life. And so we not only have great voices in Cleveland, and we have plenty of them on the fan, we have really, really good people, too, who get the city. And we should never take that for granted, the voices we have in our town.
And now I get to follow up all the bowling talk. I get to be the one to break this up. You guys had your moment, and now I have to be like, okay.
Well,
I
was one more question away from pitching John an idea that – so at one point I pitched the Guardians broadcast crew the idea that any broken bat single up the middle, we'd call it a Jonathan Peterlin because it happens like once or twice a season, and they'd just be like, oh, a Jonathan Peterlin up the middle, and it would just seamlessly work. And I was about one question away from coming up with the bowling version of that you could just work your way into the broadcast. But we're not there yet, John. We'll get there.
We're not Hey, I'm thinking about baseball, though. I'm excited. I'm gearing up for this team. I thought the mean signing was big. That's a big signing by the Guardians to be able to shore up their rotation. This rotation's got upside, guys. When you look at it from top to bottom, Gavin Williams, I expect to continue to grow. You know, I'm very curious to see what we're going to see out of Tristan McKenzie. Ortiz, to me, is intriguing as well. And look, I mean, Tanner Bibee, that guy he's just a gunslinger, and he's a fierce competitor. So I'm excited for baseball season. I think, like, last year that ride was just utterly wild out of nowhere. And now you're curious to see, is the lineup strong enough? Look, does the lineup resemble the Yankees or the Dodgers? It never is going to. But I'm just curious to see how this young talent continues to grow, and I'm really curious to see a full year of Kyle Manzardo. A full off season, everything with him. Can he now channel it and piece it all together?
All right, John, let me drag you over to the Browns. As we look at a quarterback for number two, and we look between Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward, it feels like Shador's sort of taken over as the top option and what is a lot of people talking about around here. Does it matter to you which guy they go to, or is it just that they take a guy at two?
Well, I think it – look, they have to get this right. And I don't have a strong preference one way or the other. This is the last shot here for this regime to get something right. I mean, some people have believed that this front office is overstayed. It's welcome. And frankly, you know, they're out of options here. I mean, they have to get this right at number two. Look, Sanders, to me, his accuracy, his proven track record as a productive starter, I think that this is a guy. Like, I know the buzz factor. I get it with his father, and we know that that's always going to be a part of his story. But look at the player, and the accuracy really stands out for what he was able to do. I like Cam Ward. It's not that I don't. I don't know. If you're asking me today, I'm going to lean towards Sanders. When I'm watching these two on tape, which I've watched some this past week, there's a couple of concerns with the accuracy piece with Ward and with his – for me, I think Sanders presents some more upside at number two. That would be my preference here. And we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm going to be really curious. You know, there were some mocks this morning that talked about Abdul Carter at number one. You know, is he the best overall talent in this draft? And there's a part of me that says, yes, he is the best overall talent in this draft. But that's not the most important talent in this draft. The most important talent is always going to be the quarterback position. And for the Cleveland Browns, I know this has been a hot topic on your guys' show. Mm-hmm. Look, the fact of the matter is this. If you don't nail it at that position, what else really matters? Because the Browns just learned that the hard way. They nailed it at a lot of other positions, but they didn't have it at the quarterback position. In fact, they had the furthest thing from it. So I'm in favor. I'm on the Shadur train right now. There's still time, but I would go with Sanders at number two.
Yeah, and you know, he has only really cemented home the idea that he wants to play for the Browns too. Like, so many people are like, oh, he doesn't want to play for the Browns. His dad will never let him come to the Browns. And everywhere you turn around, he's like, oh no, I play with the Browns on Madden, or I want to do. He's just constantly showing you ways that he wants to be a member of this team.
That's a big thing. I mean, that to me sends a message to the city. After there were some early rumors of the other side of that's certainly not true. And look, Cam Ward is a fantastic talent as well, who had 39 touchdowns and 7 picks this past year. You know, broke that touchdown record. There was speculation, did he quit on his team? Come on. He's a very, very talented player. But Shadur, I am fascinated with him. I think his talent level, his playmaking ability, he's got a pocket presence about him, but he can get out of there and make something happen. And he gets it. All his answers that you're seeing the last couple of weeks about him wanting, you know, that he has a desire to play for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, those are big green lights if you're the Browns front office. And now it's just a matter of evaluating talent. The questions of, can they get it right? Well, look, they've been in front office said they have not found that in the draft, but this is their shot to do it. And I'm with you guys. Like, the signs point to Shadur Sanders being an ideal option at number two. I think he's going to be there for the Browns. I don't think they should trade back. I think they have to just evaluate. They have to look at everything from the combine. They have to talk through things, and they have to go from there. But I like Shadur Sanders as this process continues to go along, because, guys, if you looked at what he did at Colorado and you looked at what he did this past year, it certainly helps to have a Travis Hunter. Watching him throw the football, it's very convincing. It says NFL. It says that he can pan out at this next level. So between that and the maturation and the kid's willingness to say, you know what, I'm happy being a Cleveland Brown, I don't know about you guys, but a lot checks out to me. And we still got a ways to go in this process. But if his name's called at number two and he's smiling up on that draft stage, I think all of us should be smiling as well, because if you're the Cleveland Browns, you got to get your future. You got to get a guy who wants to be here. And he's making it known he does.
John, now I'm sort of bothered by the idea with Myles Garrett that people frame it as he's doing the team a favor. He's doing the city a favor by requesting a trade while he still has value. In my eyes, he's thinking about Myles Garrett. That's what he's worried about. Am I wrong in thinking that?
No. Myles Garrett, there's two separate points. Both can be true. Myles Garrett has had a fantastic run as a Cleveland Brown. Myles Garrett is prioritizing himself, as he should. Those can both be true. They don't mesh together, okay? He's thinking of his own best interests here. He's not doing the Browns a favor. Are you kidding me? It could end up working out for the Browns, but he's not doing it as a favor. That's ridiculous. Take your heart and emotion out of it. No matter how much you love Myles Garrett, and God, I love him. And you know what? If you don't like him, then then you're allowed to have your opinion, but that's ridiculous too. He gave this franchise hard-earned years of Pro Bowl Hall of Fame level service. And he's done a lot of good for Cleveland. And he's part owner of the Cavs. And he's been a terrific part of the city. If you want to blame anybody, you blame the people that have been running this franchise for not giving him a plan that he agreed to, because it's ridiculous that he wants out of town, that we've gotten to this point. I don't blame him for wanting out, but the idea that he's doing the organization a favor, and that you should be thanking Miles for doing them a favor, come on. Because who's to say the assets that they get back that they'll know how to use, that they'll know what to do? He's not doing them a favor. He's a fantastic talent who is prioritizing winning a championship, something that the Browns are not going to be close to next year. They're just not, or the year after that. I know things can shift. I get it. But it takes a lot more than just a pick at number two now. And this organization is in a challenging spot with the money. Miles Garrett is looking out for himself. Remove the emotion and the heart of it. Be thankful that you got to watch him in a Browns uniform. He had a great run as a Cleveland Brown, but he's thinking of himself. Both things can be true, except reality.
John Fanta, Fox Sports 1, joining us here. Local kid done good, and 92.3 The Fan. I want to ask you one college basketball question, because you're deep entrenched into the sport. I think it's a really good thing in this upcoming NBA draft. Last year, I thought it was awful. It was a lot of foreign players and a lot of players that we didn't see play basketball. Cooper Flagg probably going to go number one. Dylan Harper, Ron Harper's kid, probably going to go number two. In fact, Rutgers has two kids that will probably be in the top five. I know one of them has been injured for a stretch here. Is Rutgers going to be like a force come March Madness?
No, they're not even going to sniff the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, why are they not good? It makes no sense if you got two top five players.
Because you got to be old to win in college basketball. And you have to have some veteran talent. Duke went into the transfer portal. They did bring in a couple of veteran talents, whether it be Mason Gillis or a Sion James to help with Flagg. And they also have a super team. I mean, Con Knipple's unbelievable. Tyrese Proctor's a veteran guard who's surging along. And Cooper Flagg he's a unicorn. Cooper Flagg is the best defensive basketball prospect I've seen in over 10 years. His feel for the game on that end of the floor is through the roof. And the scoring has come along. The shooting has come along. He just checks off every box. And that's why he's going to be the number one pick this June. Look, the reason why Rutgers won't be a force is because they didn't budget any money for the remainder of their roster. This is pro sports. It's pro sports in every way. Like, does Cleveland State have a budget or a wallet? Well, not at their level, not in their conference like this. But if you're a high major program, if you're Ohio State basketball, like you're Ohio State football, you are managing money. You're managing a roster, and you're doing speed dating when that portal opens. So for a Rutgers, the portal opened, they're like, well, we've got X amount of dollars. You know, we've saved up, I don't know, I'm going to say like $100,000, $120,000. Well, what, for 7-8 players? That's not that much money. You know, kids now, a good player at the high major level is demanding a couple $100,000. There are going to be rosters next year that are worth $7, $8, $9 million in college basketball. That's the world that we live in now. A.J. DeBonsa, the top player in the class for next year, who is he's a freak of nature, guys. He's heading to BYU. Why is he heading to BYU and not Duke or Carolina or Kentucky? Because BYU said, hey, A.J., we're going to get you up to $7 million when it's all said and done.
Wow.
It's a different day. It's a different day and age. It's why Alabama and Auburn are at the top. That's why the SEC had the best basketball non-conference performance by a conference we have ever seen in college basketball history. And not many people were talking about it because we're in such a football-driven world, and I get it. But everyone's like, why did the SEC do well, and why is it doing so well in basketball? Because the football pockets are so deep, they're getting bored. They've got other buddies. They got so much money they can dedicate into other sports. It's why they're going to win in baseball, softball, and everything in between. The rich get richer. So it's all about money. Rutgers didn't have enough to pay their players outside of two freshmen who, frankly, have been very good, but it hasn't. They don't understand the Big Ten, which is all about physicality and wear you down defense and the intricacies of the game. That's not these two kids.
Fantastic insight. John, we appreciate you, and we'll catch up with you next week, hopefully with some better news on the Browns front. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Hey, let's keep that good. We need good Browns news coming. Thanks, guys.
We do. Thank you, John. John Fanner right there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I don't know what good Browns news we would have coming down the pipe, but maybe we'll have something good that pops up. And we have a theory on that maybe in the 6 o'clock hour we'll get to as well. We come on back, though. We're at to some of what John had to say. And I do want to get your thoughts at 216-474-0092. Shador has done everything in his power to tell you that he wants to play for the Browns. Do we have another indictment on that? More to come. It's Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan.
Hey, I just realized last night, added it up, 77 three-pointers taken in that Nets and Cavaliers game last night at a combined 27% from three-point range. Was that a fun game to watch or what? Maybe that's why hockey's getting a boost.
Well, if we can get our opponents to shoot 27% throughout that playoff run, if the Celtics can do that, I will guarantee now that the Cavs will make the finals.
You know, the Cavaliers are looking like they could be even tackling an easier run to the NBA Finals. Did you see Bobby Portis was suspended 25 yes. games for violating the NBA's anti-drug policy? And so this gets really intriguing for the Cavs, who, if they can just hold up, stay healthy, and continue on as it looks like they are fast-tracking their way to a number one seed throughout maybe not only the Eastern Conference, but maybe the entire NBA playoffs as a whole. Just looking at the standings.
Do you have more confidence right now?
Well, this could be a cakewalk now. You know, I said a couple weeks ago, I go, you guys realize this is not going to be the cakewalk to the NBA Finals or to the Eastern Conference Finals that everybody thinks it right. is. You know, the Cavaliers don't have a really, really proven concept in the playoffs. They don't. Now, not all of that is their fault. They had injuries last year.
Under an old regime, though,
and you had J.B. Bickerstaff, right. But until guys like, you know, Darius and Evan really step it up come playoff time, and with this Bobby Portis injury, or excuse me, the suspension, I mean, this might actually be a cakewalk for the Cavs to the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll see if one of our experts, who's been on the show before, he always has a good time in Cleveland, ESPN NBA senior writer Tim Bonteps, right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I just framed it, Tim, as it's setting up for the Cavs to maybe have a cakewalk to the Eastern Conference Finals. 2 weeks ago, I said the opposite. I'm like, do Cavs fans understand how tough this could actually be? And now, just looking at the competition, I don't know that it will be all that tough, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, there's certainly a real world where the Cavs play, you know, whoever the eighth seed is going to be, and then the winner of Pistons, Pacers, and then they get probably the Celtics in the conference finals. And obviously it goes from a cakewalk to a real slugfest at that point. But, you know, we'll see if they keep up with the Cavs offensively and give them some trouble. But certainly that's a much better path than, you know, like, for example, there's a real world where the Knicks, sitting in the three seed, have to play Milwaukee and then have to play Boston just to get to the conference finals, right? Obviously, you'd much rather have the former path, which is why getting the number one seed typically is a huge deal, and why, you know, the way the Cavs have played throughout the season has them in great position going into these final couple months.
Tim Bonteps with us on the hotline. I love talking to guys like you that get a chance to travel around the NBA. You talk to GMs, you talk to coaches, and they confide with you. I'd love to know right now, the Cavaliers, they have now moved from a feel-good story, the early dominance and the record-setting start, to not really that many bumps in the road. They had a stretch where they had some losses to Houston, but outside of that, they've kind of been in cruise control the entire season. Is the rest of the NBA, have they officially taken notice?
I mean, I think people took notice of the Cavs a long time ago. I mean, they started the season 15-0, right? So I think we're sort of past that point. I mean, I still do think there are questions about whether the Cavs are, you know, better than Boston or if they're going to win the title, but those are different conversations than, you know, have people taking notice of them. People took notice of them back in October and November. And they've exceeded everybody's expectations, including, I think it's safe to say, their own. I don't think they expected to be a team that was flirting with 70 win pace for the first half of the season. And we'll see how they, they come together down the stretch and, you know, how the playoffs go. But, yeah, I mean, I think we're way beyond the take notice part. I think it's much more about, you know, how do these guys stack up with the truly elite teams, and how is that going to look come, you know, late May and June?
Well, Tim, part of the reason I asked the question and framed it that way is I watched All-Star Weekend, and I get that there were a lot of distractions during the All-Star Weekend. We'll get to that and some potential fixes, but it just felt like in watching TNT and seeing the national media, just the Cavs weren't really being talked about as a true championship contender. And yet every metric, every analytic that so many of the gurus pay attention to, they kind of point to a team that has the profile of a team that could win it all.
I mean, honestly, I was in San Francisco. I don't really know how much, like, finals talk there was going on there, but I mean, yeah, I mean, look, I think everybody, all I'll say is what I said before. I think if you ask people around the league, if you have people watching the league, I think people see the Cavs as one of the best teams in the league, as their record shows. And like I said, I think there's like real questions about whether they're going to beat Boston in a 7-game series, but that's a lot different than, you know, does anybody respect them? Like, I think they've earned their respect to this point.
Tim Bonteps,
from my vantage point.
Tim Bonteps with us, telling people, I think, things they love hearing from you right now on the hotline. So the acquisition, the trade for DeAndre Hunter right before the deadline, is that a needle mover? Is that a difference maker to you?
Not really, honestly. I give the Cavs credit for doing it, because it would have been very easy with the team they've had to just say, hey, we're awesome and we're just going to, you know, keep the good vibes going and not break anything up and see how this goes in the playoffs and then adjust. You know, he is a bigger three, you know, a bigger small forward, bigger wing, which they didn't really have on the roster. And, you know, I think he's at minimum a bigger version of Caris LeVert, which will help them in the playoffs. So from that standpoint, I give them credit for doing it. That said, DeAndre Hunter is not that great of a defensive player. He doesn't do a lot offensively outside of shoot it, which he is a really good shooter, and he will fit in well with the Cavs from that standpoint. So I think he's a nice addition as a bench piece for them. But like I said, to me, it's more about a statement of intent from them to go out and try to improve the team and not be satisfied with the start they've had, and also take on a bunch of money for the future. Like, that's a sign of Dan Gilbert, you know, as he has certainly shown in the past, being willing to spend big on a team that the Cavs think is good enough to be a real championship contending team. But at the same time, if it's like, hey, we got DeAndre Hunter, now we're good against the likes of Jason Tatum and, you know, Jaylen Brown and, you know, these other bigger wings on teams that got to play late in the playoffs, I'm not sure I'd go that far either.
All right, Tim, what do you make right now of, you know, this larger landscape of the NBA and what happened at All-Star Weekend? I mean, you can't go 5 seconds, and I'm an NBA junkie, you can't go 5 seconds without hearing somebody affiliated with the NBA, by the way, cracking on the league. You got NHL guys cracking on the league, and it just feels like that was an all-time dark weekend for the league. I mean, we just had the All-Star game in Cleveland a few years ago, and I thought the health of the league chasing a huge, you know, a television contract where they tripled their dollars. I thought the NBA was in great shape. Why was I being given such a different message this weekend?
I'm probably the wrong person to ask, because I don't get that exercised about, you know, the quote unquote existential crisis that is All-Star Weekend every year. I just don't really get the overall fervor about it. I actually thought the games themselves Sunday night, as part of the new format, were actually pretty good. The problem was there wasn't very much of them, because there was all of this, you know, kind of fluff and filler around those games, so they just didn't play very much. But, you know, I think over the past 20, 25 years, we've seen all of the major sports have a similar problem with their All-Star games. And I think the NBA's is just sort of the most visibly out there at this point because of, you know, where it's, you know, it's obviously, you know, basketball has surpassed baseball in the national consciousness, and the Pro Bowl was written off as a nothing burger a long time ago. So, you know, the All-Star game has sort of become this, you know, the NBA All-Star game has become this sort of avatar for all these frustrations for this stuff. And certainly I think a lot of things could have gone, been handled differently or done better than they were this weekend, which should feel kind of dead being out there. But I don't know. I think there's a ton of exciting stuff to talk about with the league, including the Cavs, like we, you know, we were just talking about, like Cavs, Thunder, Denver, Boston. Like, you've got, obviously, Victor Wembanyama's got the unfortunate blood clotting issue at the moment, but like, he looks like he's got a chance to be an all-time great player like he was billed to be. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff to be excited about, and I don't think that All-Star Weekend is the end-all, be-all to determine the health of the league.
All right, finally, Tim, I appreciate you waking up early, joining us. One of those exciting things that are really, really, for us in Cleveland, going to make us fall in love with him is Evan Mobley. I mean, he continues to get better. I've changed my opinion on his ceiling about 34 times. Is it to a point now? He had teammates yesterday saying he could be a top three player in the game in 5 years. Do you think that ceiling is realistic for Evan Mobley right now?
I don't know if I'd go quite that far, but look, I mean, he has truly become a star this year, and he's made massive steps forward. And he's got a ton of potential, and, you know, with his combination of physical and athletic gifts, you know, at 6'11 or so, with his length and athleticism and versatility at both ends, like, he's got a chance to be, you know, an awfully special player. And what I would say is that, you know, when the Cavs made the Donovan Mitchell trade, I said at the time, when you make that trade, the hope is, if you're the Cavs, that if Donovan Mitchell sticks around longer than the couple of years that I and most other people expected at the beginning, and obviously he's sticking around longer than that now after signing the extension last summer, the hope is, if the Cavs are going to become a championship caliber team, that in time, Evan Mobley becomes the team's best player, and Donovan Mitchell is the team's second best player. And up until the start of this season, it was hard to see that path coming to fruition. And now, sitting here in mid-February, there's at least a path to that happening now. And I think that is more than, like, is he a top three player, or five player, or 10 player, or 20 player, or whatever. I think that's the real thing to focus on. Like, if this guy becomes, you know, a consistent year-over-year all-star player, which certainly looks like he's on his way to being, then you talk about the combination of him and Donovan Mitchell potentially being good enough to be a true championship-caliber duo at the top of your roster. And that's where the Cavs have a chance to have a pretty special run going forward with this group. And that's where I think Cavs fans should be very excited about the growth he's had this season.
Tim, we're excited about having you. Thanks, man. Appreciate your thoughts.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right, there he is. Tim Bontemps on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline weighing in. So you heard what he had to say about Evan Mobley. And I know for a fact, Tim was nowhere near as high on Evan Mobley as he was just there when we talked to him a year ago. So there is a leap. We are in the middle, ladies and gentlemen, of a leap. Just how good can Evan Mobley be?
Joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, he covers the Guardians for the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. He's our buddy Paul Hoynes. Hi, Hoynesy.
What's happening, Hoynesy?
How you doing, Jeff? I love it. Yeah, Dan, what's up?
We're good.
All right, how many layers of sunscreen do you got on?
I hope a lot.
I'm in the shade right now.
Good, yeah, we're talking.
I don't want to make you guys angry.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Hey, we were just talking about Bo Naylor. You comfortable that they're okay at catcher with Bo and Austin Hedges and whatever might be in the pipeline for the next year or two? Can Bo make that next step this year and eliminate all those doubts?
Yeah, I think he's obviously going to get a chance, Jeff. You know, I think, as unfortunate as, David Fry's elbow injury is, you know, it really you know, kind of clears even more playing time for Naylor. And, you know, defensively, I thought he played well last year. Offensively, he did not. So, you know, it's a challenge in front of him. And, but I think, I think he's capable of doing that.
All right, Hoynes, we also know this is best shape of your life season. Who's in the best shape of their life?
Carlos Santana is in the best shape of his life.
There you go.
He's got his own chef. He looks good. He's swinging the bat well, and but he definitely is in the best shape of his life.
What's it like having him back? Has anything changed since he was last there?
No, I mean, he's the same guy. It looks like he never missed a beat. I talked to him today. He told me, I asked him if he was excited about being back, and he goes, I love Cleveland, I love Cleveland, I love Cleveland, 100%.
Hoynesy, what are they expecting out of him? He turns 39 in April. Are they expecting him to come in and hit 30 and drive in 100? Are they expecting him to hold down first base while Manzardo works in there? The whole first base thought is still curious to me.
Yeah, I think, Jeff, I think they want him to play. He'll be the regular first baseman. I think, obviously, Manzardo's going to get more playing time at first than he did last year. I certainly hope he does. And, they'll fit John Kenzie Noel in there maybe as well. But Santana's going to be the primary first baseman. And he will, I don't think they're looking for him to replace Naylor's numbers. What, 31 and 108? I don't think that's realistic. Like you said, he's going to play the season at 39. But I think, if he's consistent, if you look at his numbers, I mean, this is really a really, really consistent ball player. If he hits, 20 to 25 home runs and drives in, 75 to 85 runs, I mean, that's Carlos Santana.
All right, Hoynesy, so let's look at the staff as well. Tristan McKenzie's getting a little bit of buzz. Have you seen him throw yet? And if so, what is he looking like?
I have not seen McKenzie throw. We saw, Bieber and Trevor Stephan threw bullpens today. I saw Luis Ortiz throw yesterday. Some of the relievers throw, but I haven't seen Tristan. But, just today, manager Stephen Vogt named him as a starting pitcher for Saturday's Cactus League opener. So that has to tell you they're impressed, in the shape that Tristan has come to camp in.
Hoynesy, do you think he's viable? Do you think they're looking at him and thinking, gosh, we want this guy to be in the rotation? Or are they thinking, you got to prove it, you got to earn it, and it's wide open?
Yeah, I think they really want him to be in the rotation, Jeff. I think he's, he's one of the guys they need. Him and Gavin Williams, they need those two guys to step up and, kind of fill out that rotation. Both those guys have been bothered by, Williams had the elbow injury last year. 2 years ago, Tristan had the UCL in his right elbow, and really, I don't think he ever really recovered from that. From all reports, he looks, stronger this year. He had a great winter, and he's going to get a chance, I think, to win a job in that rotation.
Paul Hoynes, Cleveland.com, and a playing dealer joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, you said you saw Luis Ortiz throw. I am fascinated by this dude.
Here we go, Hoynes.
I loved watching him when he was in Pittsburgh. I was never 100% sure he knew where he was throwing it, but everything that dude threw moved. What was it like watching him? Were you excited?
Yeah, and, he was facing DeLauder, which was kind of a really interesting matchup. And, he looked a little wild to me. He's kind of all over the place, but he's been here. I think he spent the whole winter here. It sounds like he's a big dude. I didn't realize how big he is. He's like a guard or something, man. He's a big dude. He throws hard, but I think it's going to be. I'm anxious to see more of him.
Hoynesy, the bullpen drove this team last year. There's no question, and I found it interesting that guys who were kind of key guys last year aren't here anymore. Nick Sandlin was, before his injury, he was the comfort blanket for Stephen Vogt. Scott Barlow was good for a while. They got rid of him last year. They traded Eli Morgan. He's gone. Avila was terrific. And now they're going to have to replace some of these guys, some with guys who were already up here last year. Are you comfortable with the idea that they can do that and that the bullpen can come close to being what it was last year? I'm not even going to say it needs to be as good as it was last year. Can it come close?
Yeah, I think it can, Jeff. As long as those four guys, you know, Class A, Heron, Gattis, and Smith, you know, can bounce back after, you know, pitching more. All of them made more than 80 appearances last year, counting the postseason. And I don't think I've ever seen that before. So, you know, that's why these guys are, you know, I think they're easing them into spring training this year. They're being really, really careful with them. But I believe that's why they brought in, you know, Paul Sewell and Jacob Junis, you know, guys, you know, kind of veteran guys that can, you know, take the place of Sandlin and Eli Morgan and, you know, Pedro Avila. So, you know, so they've really kind of strengthened, you know, they've taken a team strength and I believe made it stronger. But the key is, can those four guys bounce back?
All right, Hoynsie, it's February 21st. We got a lot of spring training to go ahead of us. But the question that we've been kicking around on this show is who is going to play second base for the Guards this season, or at least start off at second base as they keep the seat warm for Travis Bezzana.
We've turned it into a shtick, Hoynsie. So, you know, just we figure what the heck.
We must pass the shtick along to you. So right now, who is in the lead to start at second base in your mind?
You know, I've said from all – you know, from the get-go, it's been Juan Brito. I think, you know, you look at his numbers from AAA Columbus last year. I mean, he had 40 doubles, what, you know, over 20 home runs, 80-plus RBIs. He walked 88 times. But, you know, we haven't seen him do it at the big league level, and we don't know what kind of defender he is.
You know, I hate to feel this way. When you hear the name Gabe Arias in that situation, I think everybody thinks, all right, we've seen plenty of Gabe. Can we please have Juan Brito? Do you think Arias has a real shot at this thing?
I think, you know, it depends. I mean, if they don't think Brito's ready, you know, Arias is probably the guy. You know, we know he can play defense. He's got a great arm. You just don't know if he's going to hit. You know, he's had, you know, some chances up here. And, you know, he really doesn't have great plate discipline. You know, he takes a couple swings and you think he's found it and then he kind of regresses. So, you know, but they could start the season with Arias at second, you know, have Brito go back down and get hot at AAA and bring him back up then. But, I'm not sure. But, you know, if it was me, I think I'd go with Brito right out of the gate. They did it with, you know, Stephen Kwan in left field. You know, they didn't play any service time games with him, and I think they're in that position.
Paul, thanks, buddy. Put on a hat and get back out in the sun.
Okay, we'll see
you, man. Thank you, Hoynsie. Thank you. Now go to Saddle Mountain and eat some nachos for me.
Okay, we'll see you, boys.
Paul Hoynsie joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
All right, let's go out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline from the MMQB.com. Albert Breer joining us here at 92.3 The Fan. Albert, thanks for joining us. How you doing today?
Hey, thanks for fitting me in here, guys. I'm up skiing in Vermont, and so happy to join you, but it had to be a little bit different this week, I guess.
No worries. Just happy you could make it. Skiing in Vermont sounds like a good time, though. You've earned a little bit of a break here. Hopefully you're having fun.
It'd be fantastic if the wind chill wasn't 20 below today. But, those are the dice you roll when you schedule a trip like this in this part of the country, as you guys know.
No doubt about it. We were just talking about Chador, and he made another comment, kind of ingratiating himself to the Browns fan base, this time saying he only plays Madden with the Browns. And then we saw today Cam Ward came out. Cam Ward made a comment very similar to Josh Rosen years ago. He made a comment where he said, if you don't draft me, that's your fault. You got to remember you're the same team that's got to play me for the rest of my career, and I'll remember that. Do you feel like that's Cam Ward almost fighting fire with fire as he recognizes that every time Chador opens his mouth, it feels like goodwill is built up, and he does get fans riled up in a positive way?
Yeah, I mean, I think all this stuff is honestly just noise. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think
These teams are going to make, these are massive, massive decisions for these teams. I mean, you got to think about it this way. And I've always felt this way. Like, if you're going to take a quarterback in the top 5 or 10 picks, like, you're legitimately tethering your job security to the guy, you know? And if the guy doesn't make it, then he probably means you won't either. So, I don't want to minimize, like, the voice that these guys have, because they do have voices in these sorts of things, of course. And, you know, if we were talking about, like, somebody pulling an Eli Manning, I guess that's a little bit of a different story. But, you know, when it comes to stuff like this, like, yeah, it's entertaining to talk about and everything else. But I mean, too much goes into these decisions for, you know, like, what someone says in the media in the middle of February to swing any sort of – it was swing anything with a big decision like this one.
Albert, around Cleveland, it feels like most of the conversation is now centered on Shador, and almost that he's taken over, that's what Browns fans expect to happen. I guess what would be the national perspective between these two quarterbacks? Is it still sort of a 50-50, you can't tell who goes first?
Yeah, and I mean, I've talked to a lot of people in the league who don't think that these guys are worth a top five pick or a top five pick. Some teams don't think they're even worth a first round pick. Now, I'm not saying that's everybody, and I'm not saying they're not going to go in the top five, but the reality of it is, I think if the first three guys from last year, if Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, or Drake May were in this year's draft, we wouldn't even be talking about who the first pick is. All three of those guys would be the first pick in this draft. And yeah, I think on top of that, like, I'm not sure these guys would go in front of Michael Penix or J.J. McCarthy or Bo Nix. I think that would at least be a discussion, you know? So it's, you know, a bit of a dice roll. Now, I will say this, like, you know, these are the same, you know, these people are in the same community that let Patrick Mahomes fall to 10. So it's not impossible that one of these guys surprises us and becomes better than anybody we've seen drafted the last 5 years. It could happen. You know, it's just, I would say the perception of it right now is that this is a down year, maybe similar to the Kenny Pickett year, you know, of 2022.
Albert, Mike Florio over the weekend kicked the hornet's nest in suggesting the Browns could trade Deshaun with Miles. Do you feel like that's even close to realistic, or would it just be too much cap space to absorb? It feels almost a little fantasy land, but what's your perception on that?
Well, I mean, it's the same team that, like, years and years ago traded Brock Osweiler, right? Like, mm-hmm. And found a way when nobody thought that that they could do that. Now, of course, if you are traded for Brock Osweiler, now, of course, like, that was, you know, a different sort of deal, you know, but I think, like, you would be looking at it the same sort of way where, you know, trading, like, Deshaun's contract would have a negative impact on the return you would get from Myles Garrett. So it's like, I don't know how you would value that, you know, like, but would it mean, like, okay, like, instead of two first-round picks for Myles Garrett, it's one first-round pick and you take Deshaun Watson's contract off our hands. Maybe creatively something like that would work. And again, like, you know, being part of that Brock Osweiler deal where they took on the Osweiler contract from Houston, you know, and wound up getting, I think it was a second round pick, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To take the contract off their hands. They have thought creatively along those lines in the past.
So if Andrew Berry's job not in the line at all, is trading Miles more of a possibility? Like, would the Browns just be fully open to it if Berry does not have to worry about, well, what happens this year?
I mean, here's the thing is, like, to me, like, I think so much of this is just about your perspective on where you are as a team. And I think I said this to you guys before, right? Like, you know, to me, I'm looking at Myles Garrett's age, and he's 29, right? I don't have it in front of me. I know I've asked you this question before. I should have it down by now. But he's approaching 30, right? Like,
yeah.
So you look at him, you look at Denzel Ward, who's just a year younger, and, you know, you start to look at the core of the team and, like, some of the offensive linemen, your wide tellers, your Joe Petonios, and it's like, all right, like, how fast are we going to be able to get ourselves in a position to compete for a championship based on where we are at quarterback? And if we can't get there fast enough, is it time to start to retool? And if we're going to retool, does that mean, you know, like, Myles Garrett all of a sudden is our most valuable asset and we should move him, you know? So I think really, like, this to me is, like, this, it's the calculus in your head should be, can we get good enough fast enough where we're competing for a championship while Myles Garrett is still in his prime?
And I think Pittsburgh, by the way, is in a similar situation, you know, with their star players, with T.J. Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick. But I think there are a few teams like this. They're sort of in that no man's land at quarterback. And, you know, it's why, like, a guy like a Matthew Stafford or even Rodgers, like, could wind up becoming valuable this offseason because it would be a way to shortcut that quarterback question, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a real question for the Browns. Like, it's a very real one. It's like, can we get good enough fast enough to compete for a championship while Myles Garrett is still in his prime? I don't know. How would you guys answer that?
It feels like it all depends on what happens at the quarterback spot.
Right. So, like, that's the tricky part, right?
Yeah. And Albert, you know, like, on that, it feels like we have 12 million different conversations we could have with the Browns about what direction they go and if they're competitive and if they're not. And it just leads us into – it's a real choose-your-own-adventure.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. And it's like – that's the price that, like, you pay for getting the Deshaun Watson thing wrong. You know what I mean? Like, that – because if you look, like, Deshaun Watson's prime lined right up with all of those guys. I mean, that's why you did the Deshaun thing, right? It was like, we think we're close. And, you know, we're in a conference with Joe Burrow and, you know, and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. You know, and Josh Allen. And so, you know, how do we put ourselves in a position to compete right now? And, you know, they made the decision back then. Baker Mayfield wasn't quite enough to do it. And that they needed to level up. And they needed to be creative to level up. And that opportunity came along. And that was their way of sort of trying to cut the corner. And they got caught, you know. And so, like, the guy that they had, the timeline matched up perfectly. The problem is the guy that they wound up getting didn't work out.
Yeah, and Albert, like, on that point, though, it's like, it's really hard. Like, I want to ask you about J.K. Dobbins potentially replacing Nick Chubb, and your follow-up would probably be like, wait, are they trying to be competitive or are they not trying to be competitive here? And it just goes in a million different directions.
Right. And that's the problem. It's like, all of this is about timelines, and all of this is – and so much of the timeline just rides in that one position and what you're capable of doing. Like, all right, so, like, let's say Matthew Stafford becomes available, but it's not tenable right now. But you can trade Myles Garrett, and maybe a team is willing to take on Deshaun Watson's contract with Myles Garrett if they don't have to give up two first-round picks, if they only have to give up one first-round pick instead.
Mm-hmm.
Then do you do that? Because if you get Deshaun off your books, then all of a sudden Stafford becomes an option for you, right?
Yeah.
And then you use the extra first-round pick that you saved on Stafford. So, you know, like, you kind of, like, look at that, and it's like, I mean, I think you have to kind of wrap your head around the idea of it. You know what I mean? Like, and it's hard. It really is. It's just, it's so much rides on that position. And I think it really kind of brings into focus, at least to me, it brings into focus the consequences of the Deshaun Watson trade for the Browns.
No question. Albert, fantastic insight. We appreciate you squeezing us in. Hopefully you get some hot chocolate and you make the most of the ski trip.
I'm falling out. I'm doing all right. Be better tomorrow, I hope.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Albert. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Albert.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, good stuff right there. With Albert Breer on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, we'll react to what he had to say, and we do have a station announcement coming your way. We'll also get to the lead as well. It's Jonathan Peterlin and Jake Volnick, Afternoon Drive, right here on The Fan.